Hello, builders. Welcome to the Builders Club Startup Founders podcast, a podcast for founders to upskill themselves and understand the founder mindset. Every week, we sit with the best minds in the startup ecosystem and understand what it takes to start, run, and scale businesses. This podcast is from one of our recordings of our Water Cooler Conversations, a weekly community AMA where we get established entrepreneurs to discuss their strategies and their mindset in front of our community members. So sit back, relax, and let's start with the episode. We bring to you another edition of the Water Cooler Conversation. So today we have Aman with us, Muhammad Aman with us. He has had quite an interesting journey. So he himself, he currently is a part of Ankur Capital. He's a part of the team who basically finalizes which companies are to get the moolah from Ankur Capital. He's also been a part of an academy. And I guess an academy is spent around close to 3 to 5 years, right? If I remember correctly.
Oh no, I haven't. I wish I could take that credit, but I have spent close to 2 years over there.
Yeah. So around 2 years that you've been. So, Aman, I think we can probably start off with your own journey, and would love to understand where exactly did you grow up, what did you do, and how did the whole VC ecosystem happen for you?
Sure. I think before we get started, thank you for hosting me. It's a pleasure to be a part of this podcast, and thank you for everybody who's kind of logged in at this time. So I hope this session could be of some help, and really looking forward to this session. So about my journey, I was always a part of the startup ecosystem, is what I tell people, because right from college, I was a part of the ED cell and then happened to kind of lead it in the final year, right? So I think once you kind of start working with startups, right, if you start being around them. Yeah. Oh, is it? Okay,
I can just disconnect the video. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. That was as people say, butt dial, right? I think some finger accidentally pressed. Sorry. Sorry. So what happened is, in the final year, I was kind of working with the ED cell, leading it, and I had the opportunity to kind of work with Ola, Head Start, interacted a couple of times with Dipinder Goyal. So I think once that happens, right, once you kind of work closely with startups, once you kind of get in touch with them, then you kind of start seeing the world a bit differently, right? And this is the time when we had a first unicorn, right? And it was not Flipkart, it was InMobi, yeah. Right, around this time. Yeah. the valuations made absolutely no sense to anybody, right? But you could see the larger play if you were a part of the ecosystem, if you're closely tracking it, right? You didn't have to be a VC. You just had to kind of be logging into your story compulsively, like you had a disorder every half an hour. And then that would ensure that you kind of fall in love with the ecosystem. So yeah, that was the first time I think TechSparks also happened, which was a thing, and I also kind of connected with Shraddha. So it was a very special year, I think, and that kind of that kind of made sure that I would stick to the startup ecosystem. But then campus placements happened, got an IB operations job. Investment banking was good, but after 9 months, you realize that's not where you want to head. And so I want to stick to the startup and let's kind of, go back, take a step back, start with an internship if we have to. And just in the startup ecosystem. So that's the time when I got introduced to Faizan Aziz, who is the founder of Myra Medicines, if you all have heard of Myra Medicines. It was the first hyperlocal e-pharmacy in India, right? And they started off with Bangalore. Yeah, like no surprises there. And yeah, so the premise was we deliver your medicines within 3 hours, yeah, within 90 minutes, because it makes sense, right? Like if you order online and if somebody is delivering in 24 to 36 hours, defeats the purpose, because then the customer has to go to a pharmacy to buy the medicines, right? I mean, and your entire proposition is the customer shouldn't buy the medicine from the physical store. So that kind of made a lot of sense. And after continuous iterations, so we made it 60 minutes and then went back to 90 minutes. And at this time, I was like interning under him at the CEO's office. So it was a wonderful experience, right? Because on one hand, we are kind of planning expansions. On the other hand, we are kind of doing firefighting. So that was a beautiful part. So yeah, after having interned over there, I mean, now I was like kind of absolutely sure that this, so there's always a difference between liking something and liking the idea of something, right?
Yeah.
So I just had to be sure that I didn't like the idea of being in startups, because honestly, it was brutal, right? And so I think during those months, right, when I interned at Myra, I kind of picked up a lot of things that were beyond my comfort zone, right? And this also happened in college, because being a non-technical guy, if you're talking to product managers, you're talking to tech people, you better understand what you're talking, right? The lingo is easy to pick up, but kind of to understand things, how they happen. I think that sort of thing just happens in startups for some reason, because you are so closely working and you want to understand what's happening, right? So yeah, I mean, sorry, just deviated a bit. So yeah, after those few months, kind of joined this startup called Daily Rounds. It was incubated by the Microsoft Accelerator and also a part of Tech30. What they wanted to do is build a community for doctors, something like a LinkedIn and a Quora, right? So yeah, I mean, I wanted to get into a startup, and health is something I don't think there were, it was a serendipity if you ask me the reason, right? I mean, how did I get into it?
Yeah.
It just happened. I mean, there was an opening for social media, and so I just wanted to explore those things and kind of kick it, signing up for this new thing. And I was employee number 30. I mean, there were 50 employees, but then, like, you know, the churn in startups, etc., is too high. So when I joined, I was like 30th guy over there. So still small teams, right? And Axel had just invested in them, so they just got that seed funding, and now they were looking to expand. And like the 20 people who joined before me had joined like in like a span of a week and a half. So essentially, one of the first people to kind of join the startup. Moved from social media, had to move because these folks wanted to generate revenue as well. And the main product that they were building was free of cost. And at some point, they thought we want to generate revenue, and they came up with an edtech product, which, just give me a second, I'm so sorry. So just continuing the train of thought. So one of the early employees over there, and then these people wanted to generate revenue, so they kind of came up with an edtech product for doctors who wanted to write their entrance exams for masters, right? So basically the NEET PG exam. So I mean, most of your lawyer would be aware of the NEET UG exam and what a big thing that is, right? So NEET PG is written probably in the final year of your medicine. That's when people start attempting it, and they can attempt it later also after graduation. So that is something they felt they were good at, and they knew the struggle, and that was a time when Jio really took off, right? So you had the Jio revolution at that point in time. So yeah, I mean, after the cold start problem was solved, the product really took off, and in no time kind of went to the BD team, scaled the BD team, was a part of the growth, and then I was like, okay, take it. I just want to take a step back and reflect where I'm heading, right? So that was the time I just kind of took some time off, a couple of months, And that's when the Unacademy folks were also kind of trying to contact me at that point in time. And they also wanted to start something similar, right? The same exact same category that I was a part of at Daily Health. And they were like, could you start it for us? I mean, they just started the research and the very basic things. And they're like, since you worked over here, I mean, you have some idea. So why don't you kind of start and scale it? So that was my foray into Unacademy. And mind you, this Unacademy that I joined wasn't the Unacademy on cash, right? So the pandemic had not yet hit, right? So it was like, okay, it was an attractive proposition. So while Myra and Daily Rounds could be termed as something as 0 to 1 and 110 probably, right? Unacademy was had probably crossed that. It was, say, from a 10 to 100 journey, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so that was a good part. And then after joining, I think within a few months, the pandemic hit. First, we were damn unsure about our jobs. Yeah, ab kya hoga, kind of thing, because that was the general outlook, right, in the industry. Whether we have jobs or not, and what's gonna happen, because there's so much anxiety, there's so much withdrawal. So yeah, but then I think in the next 15, 20, 30 days, a few things became clear. There would be attrition in industries, and there'll be industries which would benefit by the pandemic. And unfortunately, I think I say unfortunately because I think the larger consequences were sad, but from an industry perspective, edtech was something that got to gain, right? Your Byju's and your Unacademy's.
Yeah.
So Unacademy really took off. We had successes around the funding and the investor interest in general kind of skyrocketed. During the first year, I think you had investors like SoftBank, you had investors like Dragoneer, so all these folks showing interest and investing ultimately. So that was like a very mentor ride, right? Because your valuation within say 1.5 years kind of catapulted by almost 8 times, if I'm not wrong. Well, it's 6 to 8 times, yeah, just not kind of sure. So yeah, that was a mad ride because people see the numbers and they're like, ah, wow. But behind the numbers is like, you know, we had to really slog, right? I mean, the lifestyle changed overnight, right? Because to kind of capitalize on that moment, right? I mean, to ensure that you come out as winners, you had to do things that you would have never done. Right. I mean, all those fables of working 16 hours, 18 hours, you hear from, say, Silicon Valley companies, which show tremendous growth, or even from Indian companies, right? Now we were experiencing that. We are part of that. So, yeah, that was another experience. So, yeah, all in all, kind of worked with all stages of this thing. And I think by the time the pandemic, the second wave was slowing down a bit, I kind of said that, okay, now I just want to, you know, think about what I'm doing. And that was also the time that Ankur Capital had openings, and they were kind of like we interacted, and they were trying to kind of, you know, accommodate me. So yeah, that's how Ankur Capital happened. Sorry, this is a damn long thing, but that's the journey.
Yeah, this is something which we're used to. Used to longer, that's not an issue. But Aman, very interesting journey here. I think you've worked in startups of almost all different sizes and different life cycles of the journey. Probably let's just deep dive into the topic of the day. You know, the thing that we want to discuss about is basically, you know, you have been part of, you know, different startups, and each startup has problems of their own, right? And every stage, the kind of problems that you have continue to change, they evolve. Would probably want to know a little bit from your own experiences, you know, the kind of problems that You know, what were the different kinds of problems that your people foresaw? Were first probably in Myra, and then probably in an academy, and then probably in daily rounds. How exactly did the problems, you know, the kind of problems change, or were they the same problems that you saw everywhere?
No, I think the problems were kind of yes and no, because they'd always have an element that would be the same. And no, because I mean, when you get down to the specifics and how you solve this problem differed a bit. All right. I think in Myra, it was about you had the start, you found the same problem, and you have an idea over here where you're gonna deliver medicines in 3 hours or less, right? So you have a solution in mind. You've piloted and you're seeing that, take it, it's working, right? People really like it. In fact, one of Faizan's favorite stories is like how he got Times Internet to invest in Myra, right? So what happens over there is he goes to this party and an investor is there. And he tells them about the idea. And the investor is like, no damn way, this delivery is going to happen in 60, 70 minutes, right? Because people haven't heard about it. People don't know about it, right? And he's like, if you invest, sorry, if you get the delivery done in 70 minutes, here's my money. Let's take it to the next stage kind of thing, right? And I think the delivery got completed around that time, a little earlier. And yeah, so that's how I think we onboarded time. I'm just confused about the investors. Don't quote me on times. And yeah, but it was one of these investors. So yeah. So for sorry, coming back at Myra, I think we had identified the problem, but a large section of the population was comfortable kind of ordering their medicines over phone and not exactly through the app, right? So what used to happen is, I mean, see, who's gonna take medicines? It's not gonna be your 25-year-olds, right? It's not gonna be your, I mean, in general, right? Like, if the pharma industry, the e-pharmacies, the pharmacies would depend on someone who has a chronic disease, right? Somebody who has, say, something like a diabetes, somebody who has this thing. Who are their main customers, right? Frequent customers, right? This is where their revenue is coming from. And so, what is the age group? The age group is we are looking at late 50s. We are looking at early 50s, we are looking at late 45s. Now, these folks are not, I think now it's a different thing, but when you go back in time, people were not so sure, people were not so comfortable about using apps. Plus, पहले memory का problem आता था, ठीक है? Now, I think we are too blessed to kind of have cloud storage and phones with 1 TB storage and stuff like that, right? But पहले क्या था? 4 GB था, 8 GB था. And I'll tell you from my experience, seeing my parents, they kind of download all the apps that are possibly there in the Play Store or the App Store, and then be like, okay, I cannot download more. So that also used to happen. So keeping this demographic in mind, it was always a kind of challenge to kind of get them on the app. So what these folks really did well was they gave a number. You can call on this number, right? And you'll get a discount. So I mean, the strategy was the same. Like I think that this was Pan India. When you're trying to get new users, you burn some cash, right? So if you order via the phone, you get 15% off, right? And later what they did is, but if you order through the app, you get 20% off. They initially did 25 and then came down to 20. So that kind of facilitated the conversion from people picking up their landline phones or their mobile phone and calling to the mobile app. So that was one really cool thing that the folks at Myra pulled off, right?
Interesting.
So that was a problem at Myra. At daily rounds, right? Daily rounds, we want a revenue generating product. The other product is doing well, but the CEO has a stand that he doesn't want to take advertising money, right? So when you have an app, when you have people, the most natural thing that comes to your mind is advertising, right? You let people, you let folks come in and advertise, and you get the money. But the CEO thought that there is still scope for growth, and he envisioned it in a certain way, right? And so he said, no ads, but we are still going to do revenue. So then they come up with this product, but now this product has to compete with legacy products. Now the legacy is something like a student who is doing the MBBS would take the train over the weekend and go to the nearest tier one city. Now, just to give you some context, most of the medical schools, right, most of the colleges are located on the outskirts, right? You have some really good ones which are in the city, but then you need a solid rank to be over there, right? Think about, if you're a Bangalorean, think about St. John's or something. But you know, seats are far and few, right? So people go to places like Davangere, Tumkur, right? It's a Karnataka context over here. And what happens is on a Friday, they kind of take the train, come to Bangalore, attend these lectures, and by Sunday evening, go back again to their college, their hostel, whatever it is. So what also happens is because if they are traveling on a Friday, they kind of end up missing classes. So that's another hit they take, right? And it's not very feasible because you have rotations, you have internships going on while you are this thing, right? While you're in the final year. So all in all, it's a pain if you're in a tier two city, right? Or tier three city, even worse. Your other solutions are satellite classes where somebody's teaching and you get to see the lectures afterwards or with some lag, but you can't ask questions. And in medicine, you may want to ask questions. You would have doubts. And I mean, the experience is very suboptimal, right? Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. So, I mean, again, you have a solution which is like, say, 10x better. Again, something that is key for any startup to kind of succeed, right? But the problem is, if you, again, it's a very demographic specific problem, right? So the context here is most of the MBBS people, right? Even their parents are doctors and their parents have studied at these legacy institutions, right? And when you are a student, you don't really have the cash to spend, right? So you depend on your parents. Mm. And when you depend on your parents, they are going to ask you questions, right? So if I'm going to say, could you please give me 40 grand? I want to, you know, kind of take a subscription for a new app that's come up. They'd be like, what? Mm. Right? Because these teachers who are actually teaching are damn good at these legacy institutions. It's just the platform that sucks. Right? I mean, it's not sucks. I don't want to get into trouble. But I mean, so there's an identified problem over here, right? So again, a cold start problem. So what Daily Rounds did very beautifully is they identified toppers in every college, pan India, right? I mean, yeah, obviously there are faces and things like that. But the playbook was you identify the top three people in every class and you give them a free subscription. Mm. Okay. So what you're doing in the process is seeding toppers, right? Mm. And now they knew that, you know, it's a software business. You can continuously iterate, right? If you start with X, then you can continuously improve. And over time, your quality becomes really good, right? So, I mean, that's what they did on that end, right? So it was a tech-led product and took continuous feedback from the students and kind of bettered the product every month or whatever. And what happened is people started using the app. These toppers started using the app. And other than parents, if the medical students listen to anybody, it's the seniors, mm-hmm. right? And when this batch kind of gave the exam, in the top 20, I think Daily Rounds Marrow, that was a product, had around 5 to 7 toppers, right? So they had a good number of toppers. And then it took off, right? Because toppers started suggesting it, like, why would you want to travel all the way and go to this thing? Yeah, both have their pros and cons, but it made a lot of sense to kind of use this, right? So that's how they overcame their cold start problem. So yeah, two places, two similar problems, two different approaches. It was superb. And at An Academy, I think you were dealing with different set of problems, yeah. Because by the time I joined An Academy, this category was saturated, right? So again, when you're gonna start, again, you're gonna have a cold start problem. despite the funding and things like that. What people see is, अरे अनअकैडमी के पास इतना फंडिंग है, राइट? बट दैट फंडिंग इज नॉट जस्ट फॉर वन कैटेगरी, राइट? सो इफ आई एम स्टार्टिंग द नीट पीजी कैटेगरी, इट्स नॉट लाइक गौरव विल से, अमान यू टेक दिस एंटायर मनी, यू पुट इट अक्रॉस एंड गेट मी पीपल. इट एवरी कैटेगरी हैज एलोकेशंस, एंड इट्स लाइक इफ यू आर अ न्यूअर कैटेगरी देन you are both at an advantage and a disadvantage, because advantage because you want to kind of, you know, the leadership is convinced that this thing will work, right? So they want to work with you, try to figure out things, and there is more back and forth communication, right? Disadvantage because your budgets are paltry, right? Because you need to prove a few things, you need to hit your milestones, and then you're given money to kind of scale. So yeah, so again I think somewhat of a cold start problem, although an academy had a name in NEET, UG and IITs and stuff like that. NEET PG was a different ballgame, because now what's happened is, when Maru started, you had these legacy institutions which are leading the way. Now when an academy started, you had an entire different this thing, right? So I mean, on one side the name helped, overall brand helped, because if you're trying to get people on board, the educators, right? So it does help. Thoda bahut, theek hai. So over there it helped, but on the student front it was still not the same, not quite helping. And now what's happened is, because the first wave of online learning apps are out, people have learned their lessons, because a lot of people from legacy institutions kind of joined these apps, right? So I mean, the really good teachers kind of went to these apps because of a slew of reasons, right? Because if you are if you're teaching offline, then you have to do the same exercise over and over and over again. But if you are doing it on an app which is recorded, then you just have to do it once, right? Yeah. So that kind of really the thing. And some of these apps are kind of playing a bomb and stuff like that. So if you're going to get the same money for something that you're doing 52 weeks a year, for doing it once, I think you might as well take that money once, record it once, and live in peace, right? Some of these folks have their practices, and it gives them more time to kind of focus and double down on that. So yeah, right now it was, there were two problems we were having. One, to kind of get the students, to also get the educators. To some extent it helped, and where it was a disadvantage is because, as I pointed out earlier, people thought that an academy had all the cash to kind of give to its educators. So some of the courses that we got were like outrageous. Why don't you give me X amount? Why don't you give me XYZ amount, and I'll join you, and I'm the best teacher kind of thing. So getting educators was a really difficult thing over there. So then we are like, okay, how can we kind of leverage the An Academy brand? So we tried different things, and there was no direct solution where, like, you know, I mean, there were solutions. I mean, in the previous companies, you had different things that you tried, and they almost worked instantly, right? But at An Academy, we tried different things. We tried influencers. We tried to create educators, which worked out beautifully in the long run, right? Because now if you see some of the top educators for NEET PG, some of them are from an academy, and which is really cool. But at that point in time, it was a so-so. It was a hit or a miss. Some worked very well, some absolutely, you know, were getting no response from the students. So that was one thing. And the an academy model was also different, right? It's more of an influencer-driven model, yeah. Right? So the educator is the input. So the educator has an onus to kind of get people on the platform, right? Which was never the case in these two. So there were these constant comparisons. So even when we get a good educator, the educator would be like, an academy is life, so I have to work all 52 weeks a year. One. Second, an academy expects us to kind of get people to the platform, which was obviously aided by the people, by the team working. It was not entirely the same, but yes, there had to be an effort that the educators had to put. So which was very there were always comparisons, right? And so you always had to make sure that the educators here are also happy, because you're starting off something, and you know, somehow this always gets used that, okay, X person is earning this much, Y can't you pay me this, you are an academy. So it swings both ways, honestly. So yeah, we at an academy, we had like really high profile people coming, doing final meetings, and then what kind of signing contracts, leveraging the quotations that we gave to kind of, you know, get a better deal from the existing employers, because that also happened.
Yeah.
So all in all, I think it was a super learning journey. But then what we did is we kind of tried to onboard as many good educators as possible, right? Because an academy has that option where if you subscribe to a particular course, you don't have to stick to one teacher. So you can have an option to kind of take classes from multiple teachers, right? You can choose your own teacher kind of thing. And that model started working, right? Because for surgery, was a subject, and if for surgery, all these platforms are restricted to one teacher. But with an academy, you had like three teachers, right? So what happens in the market is these subjects get divided into smaller subjects, right? What do you say? Chapters, not the subjects get divided into chapters, and some chapters are super long, right? So there are big subjects, there are smaller subjects. So the big subjects have 3 to 4 crucial chapters, and each of this chapter, someone else will be good at. What I'm trying to say is, if there are 3 teachers, each of them would be known for a particular chapter that you know they are famous for. So what happened? So that started working out, and then you know, what also happened is an academy introduced batches, and so there was a structural change as well, and all in all, that kind of got the ship kicking. And also, we happened to acquire a competitor, so we combined the competitor's product and our product, right, for one subscription. And that also took off quite a bit. So an academy, I would say, was like 20, 25 different approaches, out of which like, you know, 7 to 8 worked. And that kind of got us to a market, one of the top 3 people in the market eventually. So an academy was, in the most literal sense, a journey. It wasn't something that took off overnight. But I think what really mattered was, like, you know, the management was optimistic about something of the product sticking, and you know, once we kind of nail it we only go up from there. So that's kind of showing you until date.
Nice. Thanks a lot for that, Aman. I guess this was a very comprehensive answer, very personal. I guess you have kind of told us that for each one of the startups, the problems have been fairly different. So I'll just open up the floor for questions from the audience as well. I have a few questions, but I'll probably jump in. So all of you guys, I know a majority of you are building stuff, and a few of you have thoughts right now in your building journey. If you people would wanna, you know, ask questions, if you have any questions which you wanna ask Aman, please, happy to do so. Just unmute your mic and you can go ahead. I'm just muting Riz. Yeah. Anybody of you guys who has questions around around starting up, or rather, by if you're running a business, what issues you're facing? Okay, cool. So I'll probably ask one more, and then probably I'll just allow people to formulate your thoughts. So guys, if you have any questions, you can formulate your thoughts by then. So Aman, so you have worked in different industries as well. So now you are in the VC ecosystem. So I guess, you know, in the VC ecosystem, just wanted to understand your perspective on how exactly do these deals happen. Where exactly, I mean, what is the selection criteria? Because a lot of this, from what I understand, is based on the gut instinct of the person who's making the call. And of course, there are data to back it up, but then you'll definitely find multiple companies having similar data, if not better, many a times. and people going in for one kind of company for funding while ignoring the others. What exactly are the parameters that usually come into play, especially when investments are in the question?
Okay, so that's quite an interesting question, right? Because we are kind of seeing a lot of companies. I mean, there is no sector where there are no similar companies, right? And
Yeah.
if you even take something like an edtech or fintech, there are multiple companies doing the same thing. So I think at the end of the day, it really depends on team. It really depends on what their vision is. Some people would start something because they want to get a foot in the door, right? But then from there, they'd want to kind of expand, like Bharat Pay, right? Was speaking to one friend who's invested in Bharat Pay, and from what I understood is they started with QR codes, right? Interoperable QR codes. And you know that UPI was like the most saturated thing, right? The most used and the most abused thing. And for Bharat Pay to get in, and then have, I mean, start, it was a very, what do you say? It was a very, I mean, there were 100 competitors out there. And it was a very saturated market, is what I was trying to say. But then they did have a strategy, and the way they went about their GTM, right? That's also super, super important. And now they're unicorns. So yeah, so founders is one, and what your vision is, and what your go-to market strategy would be are definitely the three things, along with your differentiator, right? What exactly do you bring to the table? What is super different about you folks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, these are the four things that we
and,
kind of look at.
And how much does degree play a role, especially when you're evaluating the founders, the qualifications?
So I would say that would come down to positive signaling, right? It would come down to positive signaling, because if you have a good degree, then if you crack the IITs, then you did. I mean, there were so many people writing the IITs over there, then you have this thing. But degrees is just one thing, right? What kind of substitutes the degrees is more like your work experience, right? If you've been working in a particular field. If you're a fintech guy and you've been addressing a particular fintech problem for, say, the last 3 to 4 years, you have a very good understanding of the market, right? Your degree doesn't really matter so much. At least, see, different. It's a subjective question. Different people will have different answers. But how we do it at Encore is, degrees are not really the thing, right? We really... appreciate if you have industry experience, if you know what you're doing, and you have a demonstrated experience in pulling things off. That matters the most to us.
No, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. Any of you? Yeah, Nikhil.
Yeah, I have a question. Like, just a follow-up question. Like, how much experience, like, should be a founder have in an industry before, like, starting out or something?
Okay, if I've heard you right, you just asked how much experience should the founder have.
Yeah.
So, see, I don't think it's only experience, right? It's also about the position you've worked at and how closely you've addressed the problem, right? Because if you're working, say, with the founder, something like chief of staff, then you have an overall view of what's happening, right? Compared to if you are working in a function that only allows you to work in that particular function and you have no idea of what's happening around, that may be a problem. So somebody, if they're working in a function that's very that constricts them too much and they've been there, say, for 3 years or so, that's cool. But versus, say, somebody who's a chief of staff who has visibility on all aspects of the business, right? And if that person's been there for 1.5 years, we would value, I mean, I would personally value that person's experience more, because that person has a more holistic understanding of what's happening in the industry, right?
Understood. Nikhil, does that answer your question?
Yeah, thanks.
Thoda sa, I guess, you know, the fact that you have actually been there and done that trumps the number of experience. You should have achievements slash accomplishments, I guess, in that field? At least, you know, something to show that you have done.
Yeah, so it's a very rigorous process, right? It's a very rigorous process because, see, I mean, think about it, right? You're going to invest. If it's a pre-seed thing, you're going to invest 300,000, right? So, I mean, generally, even if it's a 300,000 round, even if you come in 350,000 round, if you're leading the round, you're coming in with 100,000. 100,000 is now 75 lakhs. You're investing 75 lakhs absolutely on the basis of what? No numbers, right? You can't tell me that this has been my traction at a pre-seed level, right? So what do I invest in? I have to kind of see something, right? Like, so that what really helps is your demonstrated work history, right? So I think the process of doing checks and trying to understand what you've done at the organization is super helpful for us as VCs to understand how much you can scale, right? And what support we could kind of even give you, right? Because if you say, transparency is key, right? If you say that you're good at X, Y, Z, okay, and you're raising the money, and some of it would be used to kind of hire somebody who's good at ABC, it makes a lot of sense. But if somebody portrays themselves as a jack of all trades, then it becomes super difficult to kind of evaluate and understand what help you need, kind of thing. So VCs also bring in their network apart from capital, right? So that's why it's super important for us to know things.
No, it makes sense. Makes sense. Anudeep, you had a question?
Yes.
Yeah,
hi, Aman.
Hey, Anudeep. Sorry, man. I just went to another thing and I was kind of not looking at the phone screen. So absolutely sorry about the rant, man.
Sure,
bring it on, mate.
Yeah, go on.
No. I think you all can. No, the reason why, I mean, you said that the podcast can get edited, so please go ahead and edit it in the podcast. It was far too long and far too much unnecessary information. But then I kind of was also thinking I don't have a script to stick to, right? And that kind of facilitates the and the ahs and the thinking on the spot. So my apologies to everybody. And thank you. More than that, gratitude. So,
casual,
yeah. Yeah, Anudeep, go ahead.
Casual conversations. Yeah, Anudeep, go on.
Hey, Aman. So at a pre-seed level, what are the base metrics that you personally look at or what's the stage that is going to give a minimum level of confidence that could possibly help you explore further? Do you have any general mental model around how you want to approach a company at that stage?
So pre-seed, there's no revenue, right? There's yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Go on.
No, just to kind of summarize, you're asking me what are the metrics that we look at pre-seed and what helps us in the decision, right? I've got that right.
So instead of just metrics, I think possibly you guys take a holistic picture, like how the team is set up and a couple of other things. So imagine the situation in where there's no IIM ABC. It's more of experience. It's more of the first time venture or first time foray into being a startup. And let's say there is an idea which could possibly give a different look at things for something that is already happening. So this is the basic way of how you're looking at startup. And now, how would you like to evaluate it when you want to consider it for a pre-seed funding?
Cool. Got it. So, so IIM ABC, there are founders who've, I mean, there is data that if you are from a good institution, it helps. But as I said, personally and at the fund level, we do not really put emphasis on IIM, ABC, LK, ISB, Harvard, INSEAD, Wharton, Harvard, Oxford. So those are things that are good to have. But your understanding of market is key. So a few things that I would look at before investing is the market size. I mean, if you get into something super niche, it becomes a little difficult because VCs are not thinking about investments, they're thinking about exits. right? Investments can be made in today's time. Capital is cheap. Everybody is behind investment. So at a pre-seed level, we are taking the maximum risk. We want to ensure that we would be able to exit at a very handsome return, right? Now that varies from fund to fund. Some funds say that they're positioning themselves to exit at the fund corpus, right? Some would say a 5x is good, some would say 10x is good, some would say 15x is good. So that is entirely subjective. So what I'm looking at is your experience, which is super duper important. If you're starting something that's entirely new, then I want to know your motivations and where it's come from and how did you kind of, you know, stumble upon that idea. Hello.
Yep. Yeah. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry. I kind of thought my Discord, my internet went off. Yeah. So. So what exactly is your motivation, right? So we've seen folks start up something in gold loans, right? And absolutely no background. They work at respectable places. Again, that counts. And so then we realized that their parents were pawn brokers, PAWN, right? Don't get the wrong ideas. So they've closely seen how the industry, the gold loan industry, has evolved, right? And hence they're taking the plunge. But this is not something that would show in their resume as such. And it is not a formal experience also. So it's, again, a very case-by-case thing. But the common thing is you need to have a very, very solid understanding of the industry that you're venturing in. And you should have an idea of how you're going to go about the next 6 to 12 months.
Interesting. All right. Yeah. Are there any co-founder partnership, or let's say, how's the team right now? And is there any estimation or a forecast measure of how the team is looking like and how the team should be planned? Has to come as a pre-plan. That means I should already be forecasting, let's say, some core team members. Is that an estimate? Are there certain things which, how well are you able to pre-plan certain things and keep them in ready? It's going to be some kind of a way of how you look at things as well for someone who is entering into a market. Again, the same variables apply. No, this is the first time it's a startup experience. This is the first time that they're getting into a new or building their own startup. So would that something be of a metric?
So, you don't have too many repeat founders in India. That is changing slowly. But again, most of the folks who kind of venture out are either people who've worked for startups or who work in the industry where they're coming from, right? It could be very traditional in terms of insurtech or things like that, right? They work with some really big insurance companies and they've seen problems for like 6-7 years and they have a plan on how to address it.
Got it.
So you don't have too many repeat founders. So that, I mean, most of the startups that we see are first time founders, honestly. And one thing about the team also, I think some VCs would prefer that you folks have worked before, have some demonstrated work history, or at least know each other before, right? Because what happens is if somebody gets disoriented, and if it's a different thing, I mean, it's another range of complexities, right? And also you want to get, this is super important, by the way, you want to get your structures right? I mean, as in terms of allocations, equities, and things like that. So you don't want to kind of make somebody a co-founder and give them less than 20%, because then in VCs wouldn't consider them a co-founder. Their motivation would kind of drop if they didn't have enough holding, right? You are just exposing yourself to a lot of future problems, potential problems, right? So yeah, just get that part right.
Right. Thank you very much, Sir.
Yeah, anytime. Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Anudeep, for that question. So, you know, Aman, Anudeep is actually building something very interesting in the hyperlocal space. So probably that's the reason why he was asking. He's probably trying to...
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So probably, Anudeep, you can connect with...
Awesome. Aman. Anudeep, by the way, guys.
Yeah,
sure. Would love to and kind of, you know, throw in this thing as well that Ankur Capital, if that's okay. If I can tell what we're doing at Ankur Capital to kind of... Thanks. So we're having a pitch fest, right? Where startups, especially the pre-seed and the seed startups, can pitch to multiple VCs under one roof, right? So you have something like an Ankur Capital, you have Samyak Capital. These are the folks who invested in BharatPay, Vested, GetVantage, right? And then you have something like a Java Capital, which invested in Agnikul Cosmos. Then you have Upsparks, which invested in Zip, right? And then you have Anikat Capital, all elite early stage VCs. And then, of course, you have Ankur Capital. We've made investments in Cropin, Niramai, Captain Fresh, Krishify. So all these companies have moved beyond the initial stages, have got funding, follow-on funding from top-class VCs, your Elevation, Matrix, Lightspeed, Axel, right? And now they may be a big one, so I'm just not going to get over there. But yeah, so it's a good opportunity for pre-seed and seed startups to kind of apply and pitch to these VC funds, because at the end of the day, we have capital which has to be deployed, and we are searching for startups where we could deploy that capital. So yeah, Anudeep and all the entrepreneurs over here who are building something, who are in that early stage, it would be great if you all could, you know, kind of apply to the India Pitch Fest and kind of, you know, speak to any of these distinct VCs, right? Would be happy to kind of take a closer look at your business models, and if there's anything to add, would be happy to do that. So you folks would share the link. I think it's already shared on the Discord channel, right?
Yeah. It's already shared.
Awesome. Cool.
We'll any which ways have a separate discussion around this here. I think there are a lot of synergies with which the Builders Club should definitely
Shut
up on that.
Would definitely take it up. Yeah.
Thanks, Aman. Okay, guys, anybody else? We'll take probably one last question. Anybody else has any questions around investments, around, you know, getting started, any kind of issues which you people are facing in your startup? Anybody want to go? I have a few, and probably I'll end up with mine. But anybody else? Cool. Aman, I basically wanted to understand, how did the pandemic change things? Because a lot of people, the pandemic has kind of changed things both in the market and in the VC ecosystem, because there's a lot of money which is now there in the ecosystem, which needs to be put into use, but they're not finding people to put the money in. Is that the situation right now, Aman?
Oh, no. I don't think so. I mean, okay, firstly, I'll try to keep this precise. The pandemic did get in a lot of inflow. Multiple reasons. India as an economy is growing, and, you know, there are these forecasts and things like that. We'll get to that later. But also, secondly, a major driver is these exits, right? Be it DoorDash or these IPOs that have happened in the US, right? These are global VCs which have diverted the money to India, right? Because they essentially believe in India. And third is the China factor, which the anti-China sentiment really helped. And off late, also China's crackdown on tech companies, right? Which ensures that India gets the capital. So a slew of things, and more than ever now, you have the people who worked at good positions in the first wave of startups, your Ola, Flipkarts, And even when Amazon came to India, you had good people working for them, Udaan, Ola, Flipkart, and the likes, right? And now these folks at senior positions are saying, okay, cool, what you've done is awesome, but now we want to do something of our own. Now they're more focused towards wealth creation. Okay, so now these folks are starting up. So all in all, you are seeing a lot of capital in the market, but you're also seeing a lot of startups starting up. So I wouldn't say that there is more capital than the startups that are starting up. No, I don't think so. We've reached that point. But yes, like if you've seen, a lot of late stage funds are getting into early stage deals. So that is again an indicator of, you know, people being bullish on the Indian markets, right? They want to get in early and they want to make big gains. And it also signals that more money is coming in. So it's just a cycle, right? More money comes in, more people start up, and vice versa. So yeah, it's I don't think so. It's a condition where you have more money and lesser this thing. People with the right talent, people who are building something good, I think they'll always have a shot to get funded. But getting funded has, I think, become more convenient and more relaxed than ever. It's become more founder-friendly. The stakes have moved, I think, from 5 years back, from a VC thing to a founder thing. The founder has more options today.
Good to hear, man. Good to hear. Because a lot of people, and I know a lot of startups, and probably we'll probably connect separately, whom I think are really, really great. But I don't think, you know... one of the things which... we are also working on, in the Builders Club is basically to make the channels a little bit more streamlined, because many a times there are startups who are not able to matchmake properly with the right investors. So that matchmaking is something which is an issue, because I think even for the investors right now, currently 90% of the deals, of the deal flow which comes in, is usually trash. You know, not segmented. People just send direct cold mails without understanding the thesis. So, probably that is something which needs to be worked on. If there are startups which are out there, and all, if there are investors who are investing in the companies in a similar domain, then probably those matchmakings can be a little bit more easier and more streamlined in that sense.
Yeah, I think that really helps, like, kind of understanding which VC you are approaching, right? Because if you approach a VC who is not into crypto with a crypto startup, your mail wouldn't really kind of proceed beyond the person you sent it, right? So yeah, probably just exploring synergies with the right type of VCs is super important.
Cool. I think, Aman, I think we can... is there anybody else who has a question which they want to shoot to Aman? Samir joined in fairly late. Anybody has a question? Cool. So, guys, I think we can probably look towards moving towards the end of today's conversation. Aman, how was your experience this whole bit?
Hey, this is good. Yeah, it was quite good. Like, you got to interact with the folks over here, got to understand what they're building. You conducted this in a superb manner and didn't stop me. So I have that grievance that you let me go on and on. it was a fantastic session.
We usually keep it hyper casual. Because many a times there are the smaller things which you talk about which actually give the insights instead of the formal ones which you usually get in. I guess this has been a very interesting conversation, and I think we got to see a perspective from a VC standpoint as well, as to how they approach the different startups. Guys, we'll also put Aman's LinkedIn profile here. Aman, if you want, we can also share your email ID with the guys who would want to get in touch.
Sure.
And also the India Pitch Fest has been shared in the discussions channel here in the community. We will probably, it's already here. I'll share the link in the events chat for you guys as well, so you people can have a look. And in case you people are interested, you people should definitely, go and pitch. That's primarily it from our side. Aman, I guess, we should definitely catch up. I'll probably have a call with you soon. Because I think there are a lot of synergies between what you guys are doing and what the Builders Club is doing. There are a few initiatives where I guess we would definitely want to catch up and have a chat on what more we can.
Done. Let's catch up over coffee and dosa. Yeah. So yeah, sounds good. Yeah.
Definitely. Where are you based?
Cool.
Where are you based, Aman?
I'm based out of Bangalore. I think it's the same for you.
No. I'm right now in Noida. Yeah. Samir, you have anything to say? Or
I have one. Actually, I joined the day. But I would like to know a few things about. Like the capital.
Samir, your voice is cracking. I'm so sorry.
Samir, your voice is cracking really hard. No, it's, you can just disconnect and reconnect again. Usually that's also the problem.
The network.
Now it's better. When you
am
say,
I audible now?
Yeah, this is better.
Okay.
Yeah, loud and clear.
Yeah, Aman, first of all, thanks for your support, because in the evening I was looking for that particular PizDAC upload feature in your link. So I have uploaded that. And in the same part, I just wanted to know the criteria, because we are a startup into B2B marketplace. Okay. And in last 8 months of operation, we have crossed somewhere 40 lakh rupees of GMV. So according to the GMV, do we fit to your criteria, Ankur Capital criteria for pitching?
No, so I think the last thing we kind of see is we love that you're making revenue, right? Because that's a sweet thing. But firstly is whether you fit the mandate, what you're doing, right? Because you could be doing a phenomenal job and it won't be a part of our mandate, right? And then what we end up doing is we internally kind of end up referring to our friends in other funds and things like that, right? So and that was one of the grievances that a lot of entrepreneurs had, that different funds have different mandates and some are quite relaxed, some are quite constricted. So the entire point of a pitch fest, India Pitch Fest, is that you get to pitch to multiple VCs, and in the process we are hoping we kind of cover all type of industries, right? So if it's not Ankur, it's definitely somebody else who's kind of looking at it. And yeah, 40, I mean, any revenue is like good. And then after the mandate, the most important thing is the revenue. So I think on the revenue front, you folks are doing great.
Yeah, thanks. And I would like to share like two things also, that whatever we have achieved, like we have onboarded more than 400 suppliers. Okay. And we have onboarded more than 1200 retailers in Delhi NCR itself. With only like three team members. We did only with three team members and had like some helping and from interns. So in last 8 months, this is what we have achieved so far. So let's moving forward with this India Pitch Fest. Let's see, as you are saying that there will be like lot of investors. So I hope we will find someone. And last week, with the grace of God, we onboarded an angel investor with us. So let's hope for. Yeah.
Sorry. What I'm saying is that's great. It's phenomenal, and I'm sure there are different VC partners who are looking at it, and I really hope it kind of works out for you. But even if needed, if you want to kind of talk in detail, probably let's get in touch post the India Pitch Fest, right? And kind of have a closer look at what you guys are building. But since you've registered for the India Pitch Fest,
I'll be
Sorry? Yeah,
I'm
so
saying I'll be happy to connect with you.
awesome, done. Sorted, boss. Let's do that.
His mic is again acting up. Cool. I guess that brings us to today's to the end of today's particular conversation. Aman, thanks a lot for doing this, man. I think.
Hey, thanks for having me over. It was a
Yeah.
pleasure. Thanks a lot to everybody. Yeah.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for doing this. And hopefully, we will be hopefully connecting soon, and working on something. And hopefully, this India Pitch Fest thing goes according to plan. Hope you people are able to get some much needed startups, some inflow of cash, and we get to see Anchor Capital, bring joy and bring a lot of revenue and opportunities to different startups which are there in the ecosystem. Thanks a lot for doing this, Aman.
Hey, thanks for the wishes. It's been a pleasure.
That was the episode. Hope you got some rich insights for your idea from this. If you like the episode, do share it with your friends and rate us on Spotify, Google Store, and iTunes. If you want to join the Water Cooler Podcast live, join the club at www.thebuildersclub.me. Until next time, upwards and onwards.